In the run-up to the 2008 presidential election, we've invited the candidates to talk with us and with you about their campaign, and we've started early because the campaigns started early. Today we continue with Republican candidate Tom Tancredo, a fifth-term congressman from Colorado. He's made illegal immigration the primary issue of his campaign. If you have questions about his bid for president, his views on immigration, health care, other policy matters, give us a call, 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Email us, talk@npr.org. Congressman Tom Tancredo joins us from our studio in the House of Representatives. And Congressman, nice to have you on Talk of the Nation today.
It's good to be with you again, Neil.
And I know that you've been actively engaged in opposition to the immigration reform bill currently being negotiated with the Senate. Is this your main issue now, or are you still running for president?
Well, it's a good question because it seems like I spend a lot of time every day on trying to develop some sort of strategy to hold the beaches here over on the House side if, in fact, the Senate bill does pass.
Mm-hmm.
And so it really is a very important bill, and it would be a significant change in American policy, domestic policy, and would affect us for a long time to come. So I do pay an awful lot of attention to it. It is true.
Mm-hmm. There was a report in the newspaper, one of the newspapers in your state earlier this month, that in fact you were cutting back appearances in Iowa and New Hampshire to, in fact, go around the country to various Republican congressional districts and campaign against immigration bill.
That's true. And against the people who were going to be voting for it or on it. The fact that it went into deep freeze for a little bit sort of put happened to us. We put our that made us change plans again.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's now we're just really waiting to see what does happen, because even though there appears to have been some agreement that was reached by, again, this sort of amorphous group of people over there who meet behind closed doors periodically to figure out what we all need to do, the fact is I still think that it's probably around a 50-50 chance that we actually can stop it over there when it comes to the floor. They have a lot of really arcane rules on the Senate side that they can employ to get this thing done. But I still think eventually it's going to get down to saying yay or nay to this bill, and I think there's a chance we may be able to stop it. So we have to concentrate on that.
I should point out that among those people you say are meeting secretly to tell us all what we need to do, they include the president of your party and members of members of your party.
He's in that cabal.
John Kyle and John McCain.
That's right.
These are fairly distinguished Republicans you're talking about.
Oh, listen, this thing is certainly a bipartisan effort. There's no two ways about it. But it's absolutely disastrous for the Republican Party one way or the other. It seems to me that the way it'll play out is this. If it were to pass, everybody who loves the idea of this bill will give the Democrats credit for doing it. They are, of course, in power on both sides. Everybody that hates it will blame the Republicans for caving in. So I don't think there's a win-win. I don't think there's any position we can take on this issue except to stop it. I don't think we can. If it passes, I think the Republicans will pay a price, and that's almost impossible to, change the outcome on.
Let's see if we can get some listeners' questions in for Congressman Tom Tancredo, one of the 10, 11, or 12, depending on your county, Republicans vying for the nomination of
his
party for president. Let's turn to Jessica. Jessica's calling us from Denver.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Hi, Jessica. How is it? How's the weather there today?
Oh, it's beautiful. It's a little warm.
That's what I thought you were going to say.
It's not so good in Washington, but what's your question?
That's right. Awfully hot and humid here.
I have just one quick question.
Yes, ma'am.
Why is it that you are placing immigration reform as the platform for your presidential candidacy? And I will take my question off the air.
Sure.
Okay, Jessica, thank you.
I think it's probably the most serious domestic policy issue we can deal with. Once what has happened is this. I mean, it is certainly the thing that propelled me to the point of making the announcement and taking that next step and announcing for mm-hmm. the office of president. But once you do that, you should, and I certainly try periodically to broaden the discussion base, but it always does come back to immigration. It's true, because I have spent a long time on it, and it is the thing that got me to the point of doing it, of making the decision. And the reason is because I think that there are so many aspects of this that touch every single part of our life. I mean, if you want to talk about health care, we certainly can. I'm happy to.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you about a variety of different ways that we should address the issue. But, of course, you've got to come back at some point in time and talk about the fact that we are spending billions of dollars every single year on caring for people who are here illegally and are certainly not paying for, they are not paying for that service. We taxpayers are. You want to talk about education? We'll talk about the impact of illegal immigration on our schools. You want to talk about the environment? Absolutely. I would love to talk about environmental issues that are intrinsic to the issue of illegal immigration into the country and immigration in general. I mean, do we want a country of a billion people by the end of the century? Because that's where we're heading. How about national security-related issues? Porous borders. You cannot begin to talk about national security without discussing porous borders and what that means to us in terms of our ability to protect the nation. So when you think about it, although it's often characterized as a single issue, it has various dimensions that I think are enormously important and certainly deserve to be debated at the highest level, and that's what I'm trying to accomplish.
Let's see if we can get another caller on the line. This is Jordan. Jordan with us in Boulder, Colorado.
Hello, Mr. Tancredo.
Yes, sir.
It's very interesting, your platform. You come off as a very xenophobic individual. I work in bilingual education here in Boulder, and second-generation immigrants that would like to maintain their cultural and nationalistic heritage, it, to me, are not threatening. I've worked side-by-side with immigrants for the last 5 years. Most of them get paychecks that they get their taxes taken out just like you and me, and so they are feeding the system. So I just wonder, what about immigrants is so threatening? Is it the identity? Like, do you really feel that, like, these people are taking over the country? I mean, I'm not really clear about it.
Well, it seems like you've already sort of made up your mind about it when you say I'm xenophobic. The fact is that it is when people come here, you're talking about, I assume you're talking about people who are here legally, although I don't know. You say immigrants, and certainly all of us, or at least most of us in this country, can trace our roots back to some immigrant who made the decision to come to the United States. And so immigration in and of itself is nothing that I fear. And most of the time when I talk about this issue, I'm talking about the problem with illegal immigration, what that means to the whole concept of the rule of law, how we are ever if we don't address it, if we keep pretending it doesn't exist, then I think that that's problematic from a variety of standpoints. But there is the issue of the balkanization of the country. If you look at the nation's history, we have always had a period of time of where there's been high immigration rates, then followed by low immigration rates. It's really always been cyclical. We have used the period of time when there have been relatively low rates of immigration to assimilate the people that came during the periods of high immigration rates. And that has not happened for 40-some years, that mm-hmm. we have not begun that downward cycle so that we can start the process of assimilation. And it's not going on, not to the extent that it should. And that is worrisome to me. Yes, absolutely. And I believe that assimilation is important. I believe that a single language in which we can all communicate is important.
People with rational actors in an economy are going to choose whether they want to speak English or not. You know, I mean, why?
Well, numbers drive that. You're absolutely right. I mean, if you've got huge numbers of people in an area, a particular area, that speak a language other than English, you bet that the economy, I mean, anybody opening a business, wanting to do business in that area, is going to take that into consideration. So numbers do become an issue. But the question you have to ask yourself is whether or not, as a nation, it's good to have a bilingual nation, if it's good for the society to be a bilingual nation or not. And I think it doesn't work as well. I think we actually need a language to hold us together. It is part of the glue that holds us together because we are so diverse as a nation, because we come from so many different places, so many different backgrounds. One of the things that's important to hold us together is a language.
Jordan, thanks very much for the call.
You know, Neil?
Yes, go ahead.
Let me just tell you, if I could, a story that it's just to take a minute, but it really does encapsulate this issue, I think, very, very well. A lady that was working on my campaign was talking to another lady. I overheard her, and she told her the story, and I asked her to actually write it out because I thought it really was pretty profound. She was in a Walmart store in, I believe it was Monterey, California, and she was looking for a particular thing. Well, she was looking for some crew socks, and because of the word crew before the word socks, it was hard for a lot of the folks there to understand her. They didn't speak English. And she went from person to person. Nobody understood her. Finally, there was a black lady who was stocking the shelves, and she overheard this discussion or this attempt by this lady to find the product. She got down, came over to her and to explain where they were. And as they were walking over there, the black lady turned to the lady that was working on my campaign and said, you know, I always knew something was going to bring us together. Who'd have thought it would be language? And I just thought that was a very powerful story. I mean, this was, when I say lady working on my campaign, this had happened years before she was there on my campaign. But she was just talking about this. I think it is a very, very profound statement and a very profound incident.
We're talking with Tom Cangredo, congressman from Colorado, who's hoping to be the Republican presidential nominee. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Here's an email from Justin in Charlotte, North Carolina. At the presidential debate on May 5th, 2007, you stated the root cause of Islamic terrorism is that it is a dictate of their religion, which runs contrary to the government's own 9/11 report. How did you come to that particular conclusion?
Well, I believe that it is certainly what we're talking about, and certainly what I was talking about, was radical Islam.
Mm-hmm.
And the way they interpret their religion, it is a dictate. It's not every Muslim interprets it that way. It's just that group that...
Do you think most Muslims do?
That determine it as a dictate of their religion to be hostile to those people who are not Islamic?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I'm not saying that that means that they have to take up arms, that they have to do anything violent or anything like that. But I think that when something does happen, I often wonder, you know, when an incident occurs, and not just 9/11, but any incident of that nature in anywhere around the world, I often wonder just how many people who are Muslims would say to themselves, that's a horrible thing, and would be willing to actually speak out against it. And how many others who would never do it themselves, who would never actually take an act, take that step, but would think to themselves, yeah, that's not such a bad idea. I don't know. I mean, I really, truly do not know the answer to that question, but I think it's far more than we would like to think.
Another thing that came up in one of the Republican debates, one of the moderators asked the people there, the whole cavalry charge, to hold up their hands if they did not agree with the theory of evolution. And you were among those three, I think, who held up their hands.
Well, it's one of those, again, a strange sort of situation, because it's a question that I think does not really lend itself to the simple act of response by raising your hand, but that's the only way we could do it. I mean, the fact is that I believe that evolution is certainly something that can describe the change that occurs in the human species and all species. But I think that, frankly, creation can tell you the reason why it occurs. I mean, the basic reason for all of it. And so that's...
You mean the Bible in this case?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. So the biblical account of creation is the one that you believe?
I believe that the Bible explains the beginning, the reason for and the beginning and how this all started, I guess I should say. I don't necessarily know how long it took and all the rest of that. I don't claim to be a biblical scholar. I just believe that, yes, that creationism can explain the reason behind the process we even call evolution.
Here's an email from Warren. I'm soul searching for a decent Republican candidate. What's your opinion regarding the ridiculously unwinnable war we are waging?
I believe in something that I referred to as disengagement without withdrawal. I believe that the United States cannot be, should never attempt to be, the policing power in a country, the constabulary power, if you will, a constabulary force. I don't think that can happen. I especially don't think it can happen in a Muslim country. I think, and I say that because you need people who will come to you on when you are policing their city, who will come up and say, look, there's something happening down the block I want you to know about and to be aware of, and that isn't going to happen, as and certainly in the situation we're in Iraq. I think we cannot withdraw entirely from the area. I believe that we can take positions in and around Iraq that even maintaining our bases in Kuwait, in Qatar, and in Saudi Arabia, let's say, those things I think have to be maintained because I do believe we have strategic interests there. But certainly we have to turn Iraq over to the Iraqi government. We have to, and we have to do it sooner rather than later. I was encouraged that the president actually said something about this in his address to the nation on, I mean, not in his State of the Nation message, but right before that, his address to the nation on the war. Mm-hmm. And he said, by November, we expect, he said, I'm establishing a benchmark of November. Those were his exact words, a benchmark of November for Iraq to have be a place where the government is in control of all 18 provinces. And that to me certainly says that that's a deadline. I don't know how anybody else wants to interpret it, but
a deadline to begin with troop withdrawals?
That's right. I mean, it's certainly, if Iraq is in fact, if the government of Iraq is in charge of all, in control of all 18 provinces, then what would we need 130,000 American troops there for? Now, certain things can happen in the region, as I say, that would require our continued presence, but we have to disengage. We can no longer be there in the in our present posture.
Congressman Tancredo, thank you very much for your time today. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Neil.
And good luck to you.
Thanks, Neil.
Tom Tancredo, Republican of Colorado, represents the 6th District there and one of the 10, 11, or 12, depending on how you're counting, Republicans hoping to be nominated president. I'm Neil Cownan. This is NPR News in Washington.